You're listening to The Wicked Horror Show, powered by the Dorkening Podcast Network. For more information, check out thedorkening.com.
This episode of Wicked Horror Show is broadcast live to Facebook. In this star-studded episode, we're talking Strange Nature. We're joined by the director and writer of Strange Nature, James Ojala. And we're also joined by some of the cast, amazing people. First off, we have Stephen Tobolowsky. You would know him from little things like The Goldbergs, Groundhog's Day, Spaceballs, Memento, Single White Female. It's a ton of stuff. We're also joined by John Hennigan. You'd know him from little things like WWE, Survivor. It's tough enough. He was a tag team champion, for Christ's sakes. And to be honest, the lead of this movie who carried the whole thing, she was fantastic. Lisa Sheridan, you know her from little things like CSI Miami, Invasion, Journeyman. It's great. Last but certainly not least, I'm a huge fan of this guy, Carlos Alazraki. You know him as the voice of Rocco in Rocco's Modern Life. You know him from Fairly Odd Parents. You know him as Garcia from Reno 911. And he was the Taco Bell dog, too. But anyways, they're all in this awesome movie, Strange Nature. I'm going to shut up. Let's hear a word from our sponsors and then enjoy the show.
Deadly Grounds Coffee knows how important your coffee is to you. Every batch is roasted to perfection with a unique special method that brings out the richest, deepest, smoothest flavor you'll ever find. We're coffee freaks too, and deadly serious about our brew. Just one sip and you'll know why we say, once you go deadly, you don't go back. It's truly coffee to die for. So when you're ready to get a little deadly, get online and order yours at getdeadly.com. It's coffee so good, it's scary.
Hey, here we are. With us today, we have Kevin.
What's going on, everybody?
Wolfman.
Tony.
Tony.
What'd you say, Leo?
I said we Tony. Can't,
yeah. Yeah. What is going on, people?
Yo, yo.
Hey, everybody.
Okay. And I know I'm going to get some names messed up here because that's what I do. Okay. Director and writer of Strange Nature, Jim Ojala.
Whoa. Hey.
Joining him is John Nitro Hennigan. And next on the list, we have Lisa Sheridan. Also from Strange Nature. And next, Carlos Alazraki. And leading up the pack, we have Stephen Tobolowsky. Thank
Hello.
You all for joining us. this is going to be a fun show. Kevin.
Yes. So, Strange Nature. We were sent this one by, is it October Coast?
Yes.
Yeah, October Coast. And I've very rarely been let down by October Coast. They tend to get involved in some decent movies. So I was excited to see this one. There's a lot of cool names attached to this one. Big Carlos fan. We've had him on the show before. And, I was psyched to see it. It's a different kind of movie that I'm used to seeing him in. And, you know, so it was awesome. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, So, James, I don't know if you wanted to talk about maybe the premise of the movie and, maybe how this whole thing came to be.
Yeah, it's based on a real-life phenomenon of deformed frog outbreaks that started being found in Minnesota in the 90s and then eventually spread across the whole nation. And to this day, they're not 100% sure what's causing them, just something in the water. So it took that basic concept and the fact that it's still a real unsolved ecological mystery and made a film around it. What if those mutations, if they spread beyond the ponds, how would a small town in the Midwest deal with that? Especially when there's nobody coming to save you. And the town just has their own rumors and knowledge to keep them safe and seen through the eyes of a single mother and her young son.
Yeah, and a single mother is played by Lisa, who did an awesome job. And, you all are, townsfolk kind of. Yeah, we don't know where she is on the screen, but somewhere wherever we're pointing. Stephen, yeah. you play the mayor, correct?
That is correct, yeah.
Of this, and it's you don't want to really believe what she's trying to tell you, and there's reasons for that. And then because it's a small town, there's kind of some hicks
in town that that kind of make things tough for a family that maybe you know, has been affected by this same kind of you know, the cause of this mutation. So maybe if you guys want to talk a little bit about your characters, I know that John, you're a little short on time. So if you want to maybe go into a little bit about your character and maybe some of the challenges while making this movie.
Sure. I guess those hits that you mentioned, one of those is me. One of those is Carlos.
Yeah.
I think it's got maybe some negative connotations. I don't know. I guess you probably wouldn't say that the character I played, Sam, was the most educated guy. He's a lot more nuanced, though, and multi-layered than your usual hick or redneck or antagonist in a film like this, which I was really happy about, because every character in Strange Nature I felt was deep and layered, including the antagonists, including Sam. And I think you could say Sam was opinionated, quick to judgment, and he always acted upon what he thought was right for him.
Yeah.
And Sam might not have been very morally or ethically
inclined.
Yeah. But from like a selfish way, and everything he did and decided to do made sense, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. And what very I meant true. By the introduction of the character, it definitely had that whole all right, this is the hick that's, you know, whatever. But yeah, I agree that once you get into the characters, there is some, you know, meaning behind how they're acting and why they are the way they are. So I wasn't looking to offend anyone by stereotyping a character, but that's how it was introduced, kind of, you know?
I want to see the smackdown between Kev and Johnny.
I'll tell you right now who will win, and it'll be him. And I'll end up having to go to California and wash his dishes for him. So, you know, that's the way it'll work. And there was some scenes later in the movie that some tough calls that had to be made, you know, and Carlos was involved in that whole situation as well. And it's they're going there. Okay.
Yeah.
You know,
I was level headed of the quote unquote concerned citizens.
Yeah.
And I sort of lose out in one of the stronger moments of the film, where we have to make a basically, quite literally, a life and death decision. And it was one of the tougher scenes. I remember eating craft service and getting attacked by mosquitoes. And as for most of the film, since we had a quick shooting schedule, there was not much time on the prep. And Dustin Overlander and Johnny and myself were on the porch warming up like athletes to go in and prepare for this kind of a gruesome scene, to do what we had to do. And actually, in watching it back, it came out really good. We did a really good job of it. It's a tough scene. And so, I was fun to play. It was fun to play a concerned citizen with, I would say, the most heart. But in Johnny's defense, he was the one that was most affected personally by this outbreak. And so he had the tougher call.
Yeah.
I would say that you had more heart than Sam. the character. Or certainly you're more morally and ethically inclined.
Yeah, because I work in a bar.
Yeah.
At least you're willing to drop the baby and vomit instead of doing anything horrible.
Yeah, exactly. I was just I was a wrong in the cogs of the machine or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's fun. Very, very fun. As you say, great characters. Not completely bad. They have to think a little bit. And they're not just completely evil. There's some thought behind it. So.
They're doing what they feel is right, given the terrible.
Yeah. Now, going into Lisa's character, I know there's a lot to it. Obviously, you were I guess you could say failed pop star. That your character in the movie.
I think brief.
In a rocket way. I mean, she's failed in a big star Skyworks kind of way.
Yeah. And, you know, you kind of burnt some bridges in this town, and, you know, people think that you're trying to cause attention to bring yourself back in the light, I guess, in the town. So even though your intentions are very good in this movie, a lot of people aren't taking you serious. which is a little tough, I guess. And, you know, and then that goes back into Steven's character and how you guys interact and what happens there. But, you know, you had some awesome scenes in the movie, and I'm just curious on, like, if there was anything that was super challenging for you, Lisa, when during this, like, any particular scenes and just that may have been tough for you to actually portray, you know, get things across the way you wanted to.
Yeah, there was actually a lot of it that was hard, but it was the kind of hard that you choose because you know that there is something in there that will, you need to learn. And so it was a good hard, but she's in a very dark place when you meet her in the story, and sitting in that, like living in that, is it sinks into you, and it's hard, but I wanted to do it for Jim. I mean, I wanted, God, I wanted to do it for Jim. He had been working on the story for so long, and it was so deep in him. I wanted to bring it to life, and he was amazing because I came to him with so many ideas and so many things, and he ran with it, let me go with it. Like when he called action, it was my chance to just go and be Kim. And I'm grateful for that.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah, Lisa and I met extensively before the shoot, after she had been cast, because she has to carry the film. So like there was so much on her shoulders, but just from the auditions, like she blew everybody away. Like I knew that like, okay, this is the one person that could carry this picture.
Nice.
Oh, well, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's so light. I'm touched.
Sure.
Now, Steven, if you want to go into your character, I know we touched slightly on it, but you know, just that kind of you know, it's one of the things I thought was interesting is how you kind of, you know, changed your, it almost like you took credit for it towards the end. I don't know if anyone else felt that way, but that's one
I'm
thing
a
I was just like.
Politician.
Oh yeah, it's true.
Good, I'm good the point. Mayor. But the thing I loved first, I really enjoyed reading the script. I'm a big sci-fi fan. I'm taking this off because my glasses look blue. I'm a big sci-fi fan and a big horror fan, and there's always a scene in these movies with an authority figure. You got the sheriff, you got the chief of police. In this case, you have the mayor. And you have to go to the mayor. You have to go to that authority figure in these movies generally because they have to turn you down. They have to say you're crazy and you're on your own because the strength of these films is what people pull out from their gut to survive, the strength. But in this film, it was a little different because when Lisa came into the room to tell me what was going on, she was so compelling. There was absolutely no way I could believe that she was crazy. And you want to believe when you hear these preposterous things are going on, you want to believe that they're crazy, but she was so compelling that I felt as the mayor, I had to kind of believe her, which makes the kind of through line of the mayor very different in this movie than in most of the movies. In a way, I kind of become somewhat of an ally based solely on the fact that I believe the unbelievable because she, as a character and as an actress, was so believable in our scene. You know, she was... Are you okay, Lisa? Are you going to have a heart attack? No, absolutely. You know, you really brought a lot of heart and soul to this film. And in these films, you try to make the unbelievable believable. And I think you did, even though I think that this particular film is pretty believable. I agree.
I totally agree on the believable part.
Yeah, like, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like the, I don't know, the shout out from Tobolowsky. I'm losing my mind.
I've mentioned this in some of the other interviews, but I'll mention it here because I think it's important. There was a book that I loved by Lauren Isley called The Star Thrower, and it was this, and he was a scientist poet, and in this book, it's a great combination. In this book, he has one story called Dance of the Frogs. Jim, he has this story, Dance of the Frogs. And Lauren Isley, this goes back in the 1940s, 1950s, he's in England. And one of the scientists he's dealing with in the English countryside said that there's a problem with the frogs. And they go to, they're in the middle of this pond. He says, I want you to watch the frogs because they are the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
They are the middle of the triangle of life. Whatever happens to the frogs is what's going to happen to us. And
absorb everything.
Because everything above the frogs in the food chain depend on frogs to eat, and the frogs eat mosquitoes and flies, which kill human beings. So if something happens to the frogs, it affects us all. And when I read this and I read the script, I just thought there's so much science in this particular science fiction film. I was hooked.
Nice.
Well, it's definitely a... I know I definitely enjoyed it.
My mind was just blown a little bit. So.
Like, yeah.
Same.
Well, no, actually, I was going to take this time to play a trailer.
He's got to, he has to take off.
Oh, yep.
Okay. John's going to head out, guys.
Awesome talking to you.
Thank you, John.
We'll have to get John another time. We'll talk about some other stuff.
Yeah, we're doing a couple other shows.
Have a good night. Night, guys.
See ya.
So, Jim, would you like to introduce the trailer?
Yes. Here is a trailer. It's a nice little tease on kind of what you're getting into and the tempo of the film. And, you'll see some pretty freaky reactions. And, hope you enjoy.
Here we go.
Hey, what's going on with the town? It seems... I don't know, like it's not doing so
well. Well, most kids leave. Well, why stick around unless you want to work in pesticides?
Pesticides?
These extremely deformed frogs were recently found nearby. Now, pollution, parasites, even UV rays have all been culprits in the past.
We don't know what is causing it. But we think it could be a problem.
Now, why would you say that?
Irwin County Sheriff's Department is searching for 34-year-old Tina Stevens.
You even know what you're looking for?
Not yet.
You get the hell back here!
Get inside!
Good fences make good neighbors. Then the whole lake makes even better ones.
My DVD or something.
So, yeah.
It's kind of too late now.
We are now back. We're talking about the movie Strange Nature, out now on VOD and physical media. And if you check the show notes down below or up above, depending on where you're watching or listening to us, you'll find all the links there. It's available on Amazon, Redbox, Walmart, just about everywhere. And also, Stephen has a book. We put a link to that in the show notes as well. But Jim, you were talking to us about a specialist he had on set, about all the deformities with the frogs and how there was, you know, definitely a scientific reality behind this in the movie. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, when we first started pre-production early on in the film, and like my background is in special makeup and creature effects, so it was like, okay, we've got to make these mutant frog puppets. But to make something that small, to move the right way, no matter what kind of servos you have or anything, it's going to be a huge pain in the ass and it's extremely difficult to get it to look right. So then I was like, well, wait, it's a real thing that's happening. Maybe we could get the real thing. So I started reaching out to the scientific community, and which led me to our consultant on the film, one of the leading U.S. ecologists on these cases, Dr. Peter Johnson at the University of Colorado. And we got a wealth of knowledge from him. And then through him, we also have the live deformed frogs in the film. So every frog you see in the film is an actual deformed frog with the extra limbs and everything that are being studied at this time. So we took great care of those. My brother spent years taking care of them in Minnesota and making sure they were camera ready.
That's awesome.
You can find out more. If anybody's interested in the plight of these deformed frogs and where it currently is, you can go to his website, which is deformedfrogs.org. There's also another great website from Dr. Kerry Keeger called savethefrogs.com, which is also, with global warming and a variety of issues, there's mass die-offs of frog populations around the world. And it's getting worse and worse every year. And that is going to eventually affect us. So it's something that, you know, it may not be on your doorstep right now, but it's something to keep tuned into.
And you're talking about you have one of the frogs that you've been taking at to conventions or to showings with you?
Yes, so we still have one of the deformed frogs left alive, Bud. He's a large frog that has like a giant limb sticking out of his side. He's featured very prominently in the scene with Lisa in the classroom where they're looking at it in a jar. And we brought it to the Duluth, Minnesota premiere. It was there in its aquarium as a guest of honor, and people could get pictures of it and kind of drive home that this is a real thing.
Yeah.
And,
that's pretty awesome. So I know that the film's released, but you were doing some festivals and stuff like that. Overall, how would you say like the reaction was? Like, were people like, you know, enthralled with that information? Like, they couldn't believe this is a real thing?
Yeah. I mean, even when I was pitching this way back in the day, people didn't believe that it was real. Like come on. And until I would show them video. Or, I mean, this was national news for a while. Like in 96, they did two specials on Nightline with Ted Koppel all about this subject. So it was a big deal for a while, but it was been brushed under the carpet. So once we brought in the limelight, yeah, people are pretty blown away that it's it's not just another kind of contaminated or pollution issue. It's something much more mysterious. So it captures people's imagination.
So you've been working on this project for quite some time. How long into it were the cast like involved? Like, so when were you able to get Steven involved? And it also kind of attached to that was the subject matter. You know, I know you spoke a bit on how you're a fan of sci-fi. Was that something that really drew you to this, or was it? Do you guys have a relationship before this, or was it just a typical?
If I'm remembering this correctly, I think I met Jim at a dinner party over at Jeff Passaro's house, and he lives right behind me. He's a producer and a casting director and a chanteuse. I guess he's a singer, and he introduced me to Jim, and Jim has been vital to us in working in theater here in Los Angeles, helping us with special effects and things. You know, he's just brilliant. And I think I got the script for Strange Nature over the back fence. I think
Jeff Passaro was our casting director, and he had a relationship with Steven. Obviously they were friends and neighbors. And I told him how brilliant I thought Steven would be as the mayor. Do you think he might be interested? And there we go.
Yeah, and it was, again, it was a film that really worked on the page. And I didn't know at the time really how great Jim was at special effects. I assumed he was good. And I learned something, too, as an actor. When you work with a director who has a different specialty, like a choreographer, a fight coordinator, a special effects man, These directors are fabulous directors for actors to work with because they know exactly what they need to shoot. They know exactly how they need to shoot it. And they work with actors as collaborators and not as the enemy. You work with other directors and it's this antagonistic thing, but you know, you work with Jim and you feel like you're on the same team together, and that always works well. And especially, and Jim, I know you know this is true because there's no money and no time for any film, and especially a sci-fi film like this. If you have any of that problem with between director and actor or cameraman, it ain't going to happen. So, I mean, the movie cannot happen.
Yeah. If we had 1 hour of wasted time on that entire schedule, we would have been sunk. We reached points where people didn't think it was possible. People wanted to throw in the towel, and it was like, no, as long as you never take time to panic and you just keep shooting, you can get this done. Or we did.
Yeah.
That
was my takeaway. That was what I got from the experience. That was it.
Sorry, Wolf, you want to say something?
Yeah, as well, I was gonna say, I mean, with the hectic schedule, it sounds like. So, was there time to get at least multiple takes of certain scenes, or was it just all run and gun?
I mean, it was pretty. I mean, we had things planned out, but you know, we were lucky if we did more than 3 takes.
Yeah.
We never got more than 2.
Exactly.
But, you know, that says something though. Like, you know.
It really
that,
does.
You know, looking at the cast, though, I mean, obviously, look at the people that we have here right now. Like, you guys are great. So it definitely, I mean, I guess, you know, it's easier to pull it off in 2 or 3 takes. But it's very impressive to me as a fan to have like the caliber of people in like it's. And I'm assuming it's a lower budget movie to have these people involved. And it's, I don't know. I mean, it really pays off, you know.
The shots at dusk needed to be done in less than 3 takes, not because of the money, but because of mosquitoes.
Oh yeah,
let's hurry up, finish this. Move it on.
No,
get the shelter.
Yeah. How did you get involved, Carlos? Was it from a situation or?
Jim and I have been neighbors. We're still living pretty close proximity, but we were directly across the street from each other for many years, living in North Hollywood, and we were just like-minded, I guess, in horror when we finally met each other, maybe walking dogs. And then he started to do all these projects, one of which was something I talked about on the pre-show called Harvest, which is a post-apocalyptic dystopian story of people doing very bad things to each other in order to survive. And he had me playing sort of a Glenn Beck character.
Glenn Beck, yeah, exactly.
Scraping all these things and talking about how horrible the world was. Before there was The Purge, there was The Harvest. We just kept in touch and worked on a few more things together. And I remember he was asking me at that point, I was on Reno 911, and I went on with Jim to do some pre-promotion for the film, some giveaways, and saying you should, you know, contribute money to help make this film. And lo and behold, a couple of years later, he said, yeah, you know, I've got this part for you. Do you want to fly out to Minnesota? And I said, yeah, let's do it. Absolutely. And then I got to meet Johnny and everybody else. And it was, that's kind of how I fell into it.
That's awesome.
So, Carlos, I mean, for the most part, most people know you as a voiceover actor.
Yeah.
Or we don't get to see you. But, I mean, you do step out and get in front of the camera from time to time. Do you find that harder or easier to do than the voiceover work?
I think it's relative to the project. There's some voiceover jobs that can be really boring and tedious, i.e. video games where you're screaming, and some on-camera experiences where you're waiting around all day to do nothing. But with the case with Jim, since we were shooting so quickly, there was never too long of wait. Or when I wasn't waiting, I was very interested in seeing what was going on, what he was filming, because the actors were really great and the locations were really amazing. So, yes, there were times where Johnny Nitro, Big Dave, and I went to the movies. We had some days off, and we stayed at a place with an indoor pool, which was Americana, Cedar Rapids. I went to the Francis Ethel Gum Museum once or twice. But when we were on set, there wasn't that sort of downtime where you were out of your mind, because you knew you were coming up quickly. And if you weren't, man, you just walked down to where they were shooting, because it was amazing. It was an amazing set, amazing actors. I'm having fun all the way through this shoot. So that was what was great about this experience.
Yeah.
So for the people that don't know, Frances Ethel Gumm is Judy Garland.
Yes.
I didn't know.
Their first theater is still there. It's covered up, but it's still there. Right across from the City Hall.
The one thing that I would probably be all over is I'd find out the shooting schedule for all of those practical effects. I just would like to see it from another angle, you know, because I'm sure it looks completely different when it's happening, you know.
I mean, do you really want to know how the magic is done?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just, there are times where I see something on a movie where it's like, that's cool, but do I really want to know how they did that? You know,
I think it's super interesting, and it's a talent that I don't have that
I
respect.
It always makes me appreciate it more.
Totally.
But I'm like, man, that's amazing how they didn't manage to do that.
I get that. And when I was a kid, I wanted to be a special effects artist, but there are times I just sometimes don't want to know. And that's just me, though. You know, it's like, I want to keep the magic in the box.
Right. It is, I mean, it's like essentially trying to make magic tricks, over and over again,
So for
Jim to wear both hats, to be in charge of practical makeup and direct at the same time as well as write,
that was tricky
into my body to make me do that.
Yeah.
Now it was all practical. I'm assuming, except for the very last effect, was everything else practical?
That's a mixture of a real practical effect with a slight digital overlay.
Okay.
But essentially, that is a practical effect.
Wow, I assumed it was straight digital because I was like, "How did you do that to a real baby?"
Right.
Unless it wasn't a real baby. Unless it wasn't a real baby. I don't know.
For anybody that's watching that hasn't seen it,
now you have to watch it to the very end. You can't skip. No. Go to the watch to the very end, and then you're just like, "Oh, okay.
Just a second. Let's just think about the baby. What?"
let's make sure we get everybody heard from Tony or Yo-Yo.
Tony?
What do you want? Like my thoughts on the movie?
Yeah, your thoughts. Yeah. Any questions you have?
Okay, well.
Welcome to the show, Tony.
Hey, how are you? No, but as I'm watching it, I'm not much of a sci-fi guy like I've said on a few shows, but the premise is really cool.
But it's not sci-fi.
It's got sci-fi feel to it, but yeah, it's not sci-fi.
But towards the end, it kind of had a.
Is it sci-fi?
I don't know. I guess maybe the premise overall, but towards the end, it kind of meshed into me myself. I'm a big movie fan, if you can tell. And as I'm watching certain movies, I kind of mesh certain ones into each other. And I'm watching one, and I'm like, it kind of reminds me of this and this and this, and towards the end, it kind of had three feels to it. So I'm like, okay, well, let me see how different it becomes. Towards the end, I was just like, okay, it has one feel of this and another feel of this, but then it has its own, like, breaking point. And towards the end, I was like, I was waiting for something to happen because throughout, you're wondering what this
thing
might be about. The ending part was just overall crazy. I was like, okay, now this is what's happening. The last 15 minutes, I was like, okay, I was bracing for it, and then I finally got hit with it, and I'm like, okay, I enjoy this a lot.
Nice.
So long story short, he dug
it. That's what I was hoping that we could do. Like, you know, a lot of times you're discouraged to cross genres, but it was like, in the context of the story, if we could go from a family drama into a mystery, into a thriller, into a balls out horror, like that's just what interests me. So let's see if we can do it. You know,
it always baffles me because we've heard that from a couple other directors where they're like, yeah, they really don't want you to cross genres. I'm like, but that's what makes it interesting. Like that's what makes it not that's what makes it not the same as every other movie. Like
exactly. But it comes down to it being a product. It comes down to selling cheeseburgers. Mm-hmm. Like we know what kind of package to put this in. If we don't, they're just like, it can be poison, you know?
Yeah.
So if it's very clearly defined, it makes their job easier. So.
Yeah. But it makes our life boring though.
Yeah. Then it makes us go out and watch movies that are made by directors that are doing like their own releases and are not going through distribution and doing whatever, because you know that's where a lot of the originality is nowadays. And you know, it's unfortunate because there's a lot of really talented people out there that are kind of making cookie cutter movies, and it's just like, ah, this one again. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm still gonna watch them, but
yeah.
You know, there's only so many times I want to watch the same movie over and over again.
Exactly. But, there's plenty of that stuff that I love too, but that's why it's important for people that do support films like this to get out there and give it a good review on Amazon or Rotten Tomatoes or whatever, because that's the only way a film like this, films of this size, is the only way they survive. Mm-hmm. So important for the fans to speak up when they see something they like.
Yeah. Yep. Definitely. I agree 100%. And that's why we do what we do as well.
Exactly.
Because we want to spread the word. Yeah. But Yo-Yo, do you have any thoughts on the movie?
That hasn't been said.
Yeah,
that's a tough part, because I mean, so many things that I was thinking have already been said.
It's a good Christmas movie.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, it's
Christmas. Put it right under the tree.
Yeah, replace all of the frogs with elves, and you're good. Right, that's how it works.
Well, speaking of spreading the word, we want to spread the word about this movie. Strange Nature is out on VOD and physical media right now.
Leo, come on, man. There are some words I understand that you mess up on purpose, but come on. That one?
Nothing is ever on purpose. No, it's all pure me screwing up. Well, anyway, check out the show notes down below or up above, depending on where you're watching or listening to us. If you're listening to the podcast that's put up later. So we have all the links for the movie to purchase, all the links for our awesome guests as well, if you want to follow them on social media. Also, Steven, you have a book out. It's,
come on, you can do it.
Oh, hold on.
He's like sitting there pretending to think, and he's typing right now. And he's like trying to hide the fact that he's typing.
You watch his head going up like this.
Yeah. I put the link in the show notes, but what's the book that you have out, Steven?
Well, I got two of them out, but they're both kind of the same. The latest one is called My Adventures with God. And my first book is called The Dangerous Animals Club. And they both came about when I broke my neck riding a horse on the side of an active volcano in Iceland.
Wow.
And the doctor told me I had a fatal injury, which is very depressed makes you very depressing to hear when you're a living patient. And I came back and I thought, well, what if what the doctor said is true? And I died on the mountain in Iceland, and I started writing these true stories that I never would have gotten to tell my kids about their father. And most of them are funny. Most of them are not showbiz stories, but, you know, the first person you fall in love with, your first real enemy, that kind of stuff. And these stories got recorded, ended up on NPR, and then Simon & Schuster said, can we do a book of these stories? So now there's two of them. And My Adventures with God does have the story of me and the horse on the mountain. It does have that story. And Dangerous Animals Club does have the story of me being held hostage at gunpoint in a grocery store. So there are always these good stories that are all true, but not movie stories. But there are a few movie stories if you like Deadwood or if you like any of those other shows I've done. Yeah.
But these are stories that could actually be turned into movies.
That's what people say.
But, just the books.
I like them as they are as stories, because once you do a story like some of the things that happened to me in a movie, people go, I just don't believe it. I just don't believe it at all. I can't believe that this happened. He's lying.
But in all fairness, when those people say that, you look them straight in the eye and go, tell me all the dumb stuff you did when you were a kid.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I mean, because I could fill a coffin with all the stupid crap I did.
Where would you get the coffin?
Yeah, where would you get a coffin?
I'd make it.
Family coffin.
You'd make a coffin, yeah. And one of the last story would be like the story of you making a coffin. And yeah.
Well, yeah, because I'd be the one putting the last nail in it. You
exactly.
See?
Good point, yeah. That's pretty interesting. I'd check that out. Like, is it one of the things I'm a fan of because of my commute to work regularly? Is audiobooks. Is it available on audiobook as well?
It is on Audible, and I do I read my own stories, so I'm not one of these lames who's written a book and get somebody else to read their story for them. I read the book, I do the voice, and it's also on Kindle. It's on all those things.
Cool.
And it's pretty amusing. Pretty amusing.
I'll have to check those out, definitely. Sounds very interesting.
Yeah, it does.
Carlos reading Stephen Tobolowsky.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you would have to do an imitation of him. I don't know if that's something you could do.
There I was on top of a volcano.
Or spot on.
Person.
Or do the entire book as Rocco.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Here I was in a liquor store minding my own business, and the car comes up, and I hear a clicking sound. Is that a weapon? And he says, yes, it's a gun. And I said, would you like to deposit it in my marsupial pouch? And he says, absolutely not. That would end the threat.
Oh, that's awesome. Jerks Production on YouTube says he's going to be renting the movie. He says this interview alone has me renting it. That's not a question. Never mind. I'm trying to do too many things at once. But one thing we should do is for the people just tuning in right now, we're going to play the trailer again. So this is Strange Nature. As we said before, it's out on VOD and physical media right now. Walmart, Amazon, Redbox. Check show notes down below or up above. You'll find all the links right there. And here we go. Here's the trailer for Strange Nature.
Hey, what's going on with the town? It seems... I don't know, like it's not doing so
well. Well, most kids leave. Well, why stick around unless you want to work in pesticides?
Pesticides?
These extremely deformed frogs were recently found nearby. Now, pollution, parasites, even UV rays have all been culprits in the past.
We don't know what is causing it. But we think it could be a problem.
Now, why would you say that?
Erwin County Sheriff's Department is searching for 34-year-old Tina Stevens.
You even know what you're looking for?
Not yet.
You get the hell back here!
Get inside!
If good fences make good neighbors, then the whole lake makes even better ones.
Okay, we are back. Since we have a full house tonight, we're going to go through the list. Make sure you follow everybody here. Show notes down below or up above. You'll find all the links for their social media, but let's figure out what everybody is coming up with next. We'll start with you, Carlos. What's next in your pipeline?
Well, I have a project in production coming up. We're going to be shooting in Temecula called Witness Infection. It's a movie I co-wrote with Joe Michelle Meleon, and you formerly titled Mob Zombies, and
it's
that's my daughter who's actually maybe in it. But actually, we are going to use the talented services of Jim Ojala as our head practical makeup and makeup person for this movie. So excited about that. We're looking to start shooting December 3rd and finishing sometime in January, although it'll be one of those short 15-day shoots. And it also co-stars our dear friend, Big Dave Matty. And we want to extend all our thoughts and prayers out to Dave and his wife, Christina. They're going through a pretty tough time, and so we all wanted to send our best wishes to Big Dave Matty. But that's what's coming up for me. Witness Infection.
Awesome.
Yeah. And Jim O'Connor.
You doing any cons coming up as well?
Yeah, I've got some cons next year. I will send those to you later. I've got one in June, a couple in August. I think one is Tampa Bay in August. One is Michigan, I believe, in June, and there's one more. I think Rocco will finally get released, Static Cling, the 25th anniversary of Rocco. And there's some news concerning a live-action show I used to do that's not official yet, so we'll see.
Oh, sounds good.
Oh, all right.
We'll see.
I can take some guesses at that.
Vague.
You mentioned August. Are you doing Terrificon?
I don't know if I'm doing Terrificon. I'll have to look it up.
Tell you what, I'll put you.
Somebody else, I'll be
yeah, well, yeah, we'll yeah. figure that out afterwards because that would be awesome if you're doing Terrificon.
Yeah,
that's in our neck of the woods.
That would be terrific.
Yeah, I think I'm friends with you on Facebook, so I'll put you in contact with the owner. Steven, what do you got going on?
Well, I have the third season of One Day at a Time that's going to be coming out probably at the beginning of the year, and in December. Well, I'm shooting right now, Schooled, which is the Goldberg spinoff. So I'm doing two of those this week, and I think one next week. But I'm going to Winnipeg in December to shoot a movie called Fracture, which really you guys would dig because it's like a very Black Mirror.
Oh, nice.
You know, it is very, it's a great kind of twisted psychological horror film. And I'm looking forward to it very much.
I think I may have auditioned for this one. Did it involve a setting in Norway, for chance?
No, it's really a family driving across country. Ooh. and they have an accident.
Oh, boy.
And they try to go into a hospital, and things begin to happen that are unaccounted for.
Wow. And it probably happened to you in real life, and it's in your book.
Right.
Based on a true story by Stephen Tobolowsky.
Yeah, problem with me, no matter what happens to me in real life, people come up to me and say, well, you know, I've got this screenplay.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe
that's what the cardiologist said to me when I was getting open heart surgery. He was going like, are you Stephen Tobolowsky? And he goes like, you know, I have this screenplay idea.
I'm going like, not now. Now's not the time,
Now's not the time.
Just the idea.
But all is very, and if they're fans of the podcast out there, the Tobolowsky Files podcast, I just talked to David Chen, and we're going to be doing, I've written five so far of the new season. And if you are out in Seattle area, David and I are going to do a live show at the Neptune in May, where I'm going to be doing more stories, and we're going to film it, and it'll be a movie kind of thing.
Awesome.
Oh, nice. The Neptune.
Neptune's very, cool. Very cool. Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm going to subscribe to your podcast right now. I have my commute's like an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Oh, God. Yeah, you need my podcast.
Yeah, there we go. Don't we all? We do.
And it's totally free. Totally free. No salesman will call.
Jim.
Yes. You have a couple cool things out right now. On the Shudder channel, the horror channel Shudder, we have a show called The Core, which is pretty much like the coolest horror movie talk show you can imagine. It's on there. I'm the co-host. I co-produced it. We have everybody on there from the Soska sisters to Lee Whannell to Mary Harron. We had Glenn Danzig on. It's an incredible show that really gets in depth on horror films and gets different icons on the show. And then I take you behind the scenes also and show you how certain iconic effects were done in different films and show you how they were done and how they could be done in different budgets. And it's a really cool show on Shudder. And also just had a new music video that I directed come out called Cluck at the Moon from the Radioactive Chickenheads, best chicken band in Los Angeles. And they're actually quite good. And they put on like one of the best stage shows you'll ever see. So Cluck at the Moon, that's on YouTube right now.
And if Johnny were here, he'd go, bah, 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 bah!
And then, and then just I'm pitching a new TV series that I wrote, kind of a sci-fi thriller series, and working on a couple new features. So, and then also, in addition to the film with Carlos, we just wrapped on another project with John Hennigan called The Iron Sheik Massacre. And yes, it's just as awesome as that title sounds.
Yeah.
I can't say anything more about it, but it's going to be incredible. And that will be coming out early next year.
Is the Iron Sheik in it?
Yes.
All right.
Oh no. So it's nothing like WrestleMania.
It's I can't even begin to describe this, but it's bonkers and you have to see it.
I will definitely see it. Yeah, I will definitely see it. The Iron Sheik is this, I don't know. There's so many weird things I've seen over the years with the Iron Sheik, and I've seen him wrestle not that long ago. And I was just like, this is crazy. How is he he couldn't even fall. He was I think his knees were still in a really bad. So the whole match, he didn't fall once the whole match. And I was like, but it's still very entertaining.
Oh, yeah. Crazy. As long as that guy still has the voice, he's solid.
Oh, yeah. 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 Definitely.
And Lisa, I know you're doing a little bit of recovery.
Anything anything you're looking to do in the near future?
Well, I had to have brain surgery twice last year. I almost died, I didn't on here. And I lost the ability to speak for a while, so I'm still gonna I'm getting that back. Yeah, I know. Wow. But I'm here and I'm working on writing projects and lots of different sort of other things. But I'm mostly just glad to be alive.
Well, we're glad that you're alive as well.
We're so happy you're here. You make the world so much better.
Thank you. Oh my god.
So much better.
Say that. Did Stephen Tobolowsky say that to me?
No, it's true. It's true.
Oh my god. Thank you.
Alizraki says it too. You got Alizraki and Tobolowsky. You've got all the alphabet saying it.
Yes, all alphabet.
I'm so glad to be here. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Oh my gosh. Thank you.
Oh, that's awesome.
I know it is. Totally awesome.
I know we didn't hear too much from the group here about your thoughts of the movie, Kevin. I know you talked a little bit about it.
I definitely dug it. It's definitely worth checking out. I mean, it's like I was saying before, there's a lot of cookie cutter movies out there. This is not one of them. Definitely. And look at the cast. I mean, look at the amount of talent in this cast, and it's just, you know, it's something you need to check out. I think you have a fan, Stephen.
Oh, well, it's a mutual admiration society.
I think she has a screenplay.
Uh-oh.
There's always room for Tobolowsky.
I'm like happy to be, really happy to be a part.
No, you carried the film. You were amazing. The relationship that you had with your son, with your father, with the person that was the science teacher in the school, you had to carry all those hats. The former child, and it was flawless. It was seamless. It was really what Hello. Literally carried the film.
But thank you. Really, thank you.
You're welcome.
Really honored.
Yeah, it was heavy. It was heavy, and we've actually been getting a lot of questions about a sequel. So,
if you need another guy to throw up while holding a baby, Carlos is on board.
The mayor is going to be a big part of that. Are you ready?
It is opened enough that like it could be really interesting to see where these things go. What happens when this generation grows up, and you know what happens next? So there's definitely some possibilities there. So
nice.
I'm working on a treatment for that too. If the interest grows with that, we'll be ready.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if what happens in the real world doesn't supersede science fiction.
Yeah.
Exactly. That time.
Fingers crossed.
I know. That's what
I hope everybody voted. Yes.
Yes. Yep. We all did. I did.
Yo-Yo, what were your thoughts on the movie?
It was amazing. I mean, I can't fit in any other words, honestly. It was just simply amazing, like, from the way it was shot, the acting, special effects. Like, there was no weak point of this movie. They had me, like, enthralled the whole time. It's just amazing. I mean,
thank you.
Tony?
Put it in words like everybody else, I guess. It's different and amazing at the same time. Like it's so, like I was saying before, it kind of had a few different movies put into one, and then towards the end, like I said, that capped me off. as good as it could have.
Well, there you go. Well, Tony liked it.
Big question. For
I enjoyed it.
So how soon is it going to be on your shelf in the back there, Tony?
Probably the next time I go out Blu-ray or DVD hunting, but that won't be until Black Friday, so a couple of weeks.
Okay.
But it will be placed on there.
Yeah. Count those sales.
I wait till I wait till Black Friday now. Towards November, I don't buy many movies until Black Friday.
It's called priorities, everyone. Yeah. He waits for the deals. Okay.
Yeah, I know. That's important.
It is. Yeah. It is. Speaking another person who waits for the deals is Wolfman.
Yeah, I was going to say. 13th
Wolfman.
I was going to say.
Who's been saving his money all year for movies.
So he can ruin some poor Best Buy employee's day.
Right. So what were your I mean, I'm sure you already... You talked about your thoughts on the sit down, but still, I don't know what your thoughts are.
This movie falls into a couple of categories for me. It's environmental horror, and it's one of those when animals attack films, like Grizzly or Nightwing or The Birds. You know, so I really got into that, and you know, it's because of the environmental horror that we get movies like Toxic Avenger, because we had Lloyd Kaufman on. And he said that it was because he saw like a McDonald's wrapper on the ground. You know, it was one of those old, it wasn't a wrapper. It was one of those old styrofoam cups that they used to come in, you know, that he saw that he came up with the Toxic Avenger. So from that, that's it, Tony. From that, we get another great story, you know, which just, Jim was talking about this earlier, but Jim, did they ever come up with an actual speculation of what's caused? I mean, is it environment? Is it pollution? Is it, I mean,
do they ever solve the problem of the frogs? Like what caused it?
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of variables. The leading theory is the one that we present the most prominently in the film, which is that pesticide, fertilizer, herbicide overspray leaking in the wetlands basically causes algae blooms, which brings in these snails, these invasive snails that will have this parasite in them, this trematode worm. And basically, when that worm gets into the water, after it leaves the snail, it purposely tries to find a tadpole, and it burrows into the limb buds of the tadpole. It basically makes the tadpole handicapped on purpose. So as the limb buds grow, instead of sprouting one normal leg, it might sprout no legs or four legs in the one spot. So basically when it gets on land, it's all clunky and it gets picked off really easily by a bird. Therefore, the life cycle of the parasite continues in the feces of the bird, gets dropped back on the shore, and the whole cycle starts again. Wow. So
the whole reason for this worm is to genetically deform frogs.
Exactly. Wow. Because it knows that is both amazing and scary as hell.
Yeah.
Exactly. Get eaten quicker.
But you know, I love that kind of. I mean, that's the thing. I love this movie because of that. I like the fact that it's so dripped in science, you know, and This movie has an important message, you know. It needs to be seen. I'll be throwing it into my collection, you know. I know Tony, I know Kev well, you know. It's something that it's a good movie.
Yeah,
it's well made. It's well made, and it's not just some low budget, you know, film thrown together. Mm-hmm. You can see that there's. I said it before on Sit Down. There's passion behind this, and that's what sells it.
I mean, that's why I spent 15 years, along with my wife, the producer, Beth Meadows, getting this made, because, like, there was a lot of places along the way, like, oh, okay, we could make it this way or that way, but it had to be a real movie. It had to, like, be done the right way. So, and that just goes to show you, if you stick to your guns long enough and you don't give up, you can pull it off. So, and we did it. And we didn't have to answer to anybody. We did it exactly how we wanted to do it.
I'm glad you did.
I was just going to say the exact same thing.
I'm glad you did make this movie. Yeah, definitely.
Well, certainly, you know, another fine product from October Coast. We've been getting a lot of great stuff from them lately.
It's weird. Like a lot of people are like, oh, what do you think of this movie? And like, it's, you know, a lot of times I'm like, meh, whatever. But it's like, I feel like I'm liking too much stuff. I mean, it's not a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. But, you know, there's a lot of times where some things are like, yeah, avoid this one. But I'm like, it doesn't happen as often anymore. And that's
you know, I'd like to give a shout out too to like
not only like filming in Minnesota with the Minnesota Film Board and the rebates, awesome place to film, but also working with SAG as a super low budget independent film. A lot of independent filmmakers I know are super scared by working with SAG that it's going to be a nightmare or anything. I wouldn't have had all these amazing actors if we didn't go SAG, and SAG was awesome. Like we got, I mean, it was no problem. So I just want to make that clear to other independent filmmakers that might be thinking about SAG or not SAG, go for it, because the actors just don't compare. Like you're not going to get a solid film without the SAG actors. And they're easy to work with. It's not a good deal.
They're pros. Yeah.
Yeah. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
You know, because you can tell sometimes that they just go off book because it's right. These are the people we can get.
There's so many filmmakers just automatically assume we can't go SAG. You know what? Give it a shot. Give it a shot first and see if you can.
Well, we are at the 10 o'clock hour, so we're going to start wrapping things up. I want to thank you all for joining us this evening. If you're just joining in, we're talking about Strange Nature, and you can find more information about it in the show notes down below or up above. And also all the information about our awesome guests. And we'll start with Steven. Where do you like people following you?
I think probably the easiest is Twitter, @Tobolowsky. And I also have a website, steventobolowsky.com, that'll mention the books and movies and next appearances I'll be making.
Awesome. And you have any conventions you're going to be doing anytime soon? I know you mentioned Chiller. You just did.
We did Chiller and we had a bomb threat. You know, we
yeah, yeah.
That I was heard about wild, that. Man. That was wild. But I think I'm back to work now. Working in front of the camera, or is it behind the camera? In front of it.
Yeah.
Somewhere.
Well, either
in the vicinity of a camera.
Yeah. He's working with the camera.
Working with the camera.
Yeah. As a co-worker.
I just know my wife's going to freak when I tell her that there's a Goldberg spinoff coming out.
Yeah, it's cool. It takes place 10 years later.
Nice. I know they tried to do like a spinoff, what, last season with a different family or maybe that was Speechless. I'm thinking of something else. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, they're all awesome shows.
It's funny.
Yeah. Absolutely love Goldberg's. Carlos.
Yes. As I said, I'll be doing 3 cons so far next year. No, you can find those cons listed on my website eventually. CarlosAlizRocky.com. @CarlosAlizRocky on Twitter and @CarlosAlizRocky Instagram, and Yo Quiero Strange Nature.
Nice.
I haven't heard that voice in a while.
I was blowing people's minds at work today. I'm like, you realize that the same guy who did Rocco was also the Taco Bell dog? Like, what? I'm like, it's the same dude. Imagine. Watch the show, you'll know.
Yo Quiero Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Awesome. Lisa, where do you like people following you?
I have a weird relationship with social media. I don't really know what to do with it, but I have an Instagram account and it's kind of like my diary, like visual diary. So if you want to watch that, it's @curiouscoyote.com, and then my Twitter is like something close to that but slightly different, _ or like it's Curious Coyote _, like it's like something like that, but that's me.
Your Instagram is
it's a great Instagram. She takes amazing photos, very very cool moments.
Wow. Oh, I just mess around. It helps me remember where I've been.
Exactly.
And you can find the information in the show notes down below or up above. The Instagram is curious_coyote, and then Twitter is curious_coyote.
You're the sweetest. Thank you.
You're welcome. Jim, where do you like people following you?
Well, you can find out everything about the film, its whole history, all the topics that are related to it at strangenaturemovie.com. And then you can find me at Twitter, @Jimojula and @StrangeNature1 for more information on the film. And then on Instagram, @OjulaEffects and @OjulaVision and @StrangeNatureMovie.
Awesome. Yo, yo.
You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Boy Meets Phone. Also, Yo Saint Laurent on those social media channels. I'm more active on Yo Saint Laurent at the moment, though, so you might want to follow me there. Of course, you can find me here.
I'm going to have to change your lower third on the next show. Tony.
You can keep it. I use both.
Tony?
You can find me on Tony Has Nine Fingers on YouTube, on Twitter, on Horimino, and I forget what else. But you can also find me on Instagram at Tony's Movies, where I show off the movies behind me. And, of course, here on The Dorkman.
Tony, you still doing the Stardust app?
Not as much.
Okay.
Do you really have nine fingers, Tony?
It's a nickname. I got a messed up finger. So in high school, they call me. They're like, oh, you know, you should give yourself a nickname. And
he's
I'm from Italian,
Jersey.
So
Tony
like,
has nine fingers. Yeah.
So they're like, why don't you just call yourself Tony Has Nine Fingers?
I like that.
So
that's really cool. I think
we have to put
thank you.
Yeah, put him in a movie. Make a movie.
That'll
I'm
work.
Sure someone has a script that you can work with. But
that'll work.
You'd be surprised, or maybe not, of how many times people ask him on the show if he really has nine fingers.
I know. You know there has
a lot. Oh, totally. Yeah, and there is, and it's a good story. Yeah, Wolfie.
Well, you could find me on YouTube, The 13th Wolfman, Twitter at The 13th Wolfman, Tumblr, 13th Wolfman, The Prowl, every Sunday on The Dorkening, every Tuesday here on The Wicked Horror Show, doing the Wicked Horror Reviews with Kev. And right now I've got my most recent Doom Room review up of Nightwing, the 1979 horror classic. Check it out, Kev.
1979, is that the guy that comes back from Vietnam with the hypodermic needle?
No, this is the one that takes place on an Indian reservation where they're being...
Forget it. It's that one. You're wrong. Anyway. You can find me, A Knuckle, on Twitter and Instagram every Sunday in The Dorkening, Tuesday Wicked Horror Show, doing stuff with Wolfie. And that's about it. We're done for the con season, it looks like, right, Leo?
Yeah. No more cons.
Thank goodness. More con crud. So, Leo, where can people find you?
Well, normally here, just making sure all the cameras work and messing up. I know. But we do the show multiple times throughout the week. We do the Wicked Horror Show live in front of a online audience every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern. We do the Dorkening Roundtable Discussion every Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern. And we're going to be starting up a new podcast. You'll learn more about that in the coming weeks. Looking to start it beginning of December. It's going to be me, James, Genevieve, Yo-Yo, Alex is going to be joining us as well. It's going to be a fun time. But, you know, if you missed this show, we always have the podcast up the following week. So make sure you subscribe to Wicked Horror Show Podcast. And without further ado, I want to thank all my guests this evening. And we'll catch you later. Bye.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, guys, for coming on. You guys are awesome.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcast. If you want to be part of a future show, you can find us over on YouTube or Facebook, where we broadcast all our episodes multiple times a week live in front of an online audience, where you can interact with us and our guests. Our main show, The Dorkening, is produced live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific. The Wicked Horror Show comes at you Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And the Ultimate Video Game Show zooms in on Thursdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. This has been a Dorkening Network production powered by New Media Promotions. You can learn more about our network by heading on over to www.thedorkening.com.